I think the thing that I love the most about the fog machine, and Mark has set up a fog machine here in the podcast, so we actually are doing a podcast with full-blown stage effects tonight.
I genuinely thought I might be on fire.
Yeah, yeah. No, the best thing about it is, like, when he shuts it down, it sounds like maybe there's a cat on an electric fence. Like, I'm not really sure.
Well, there's something else going on here, and there's a large head and face staring at us.
What is Godspell, Mark?
Well, it's a play.
Okay. Well, it's a musical, Mark.
It's a musical, okay.
So it's definitely a Mark Cuvion
production.
Piece.
Yes.
But yeah, a joint. A Mark Cuvion joint.
So my high school did a production of Godspell when I was a senior in high school, and I was
starring apparently in
the band.
One of the members of Queen.
It's a rock musical.
Or Kiss.
And
or April Wine.
And I hand illustrated the
you say April
banner
Wine?
For it. Yeah. So that's what we have hanging in our garage now.
It's pretty
giant
cool looking.
Banner from Godspell.
It's I'm actually pretty amazed by how much I thought it was just like a print.
Janet asked me when I hung it up, is that meant to be funny or creepy?
Well, yeah, I was going to say creepy. Is this a Halloween thing? Because it's pretty creepy, this big head.
Well, is this
head,
like a Japanese flag thing here? Or is
it's like
acne?
Kabuki,
or what?
Theater.
In the musical, they're all kind of clowns, like the disciples,
et cetera. And Ryan's pointing at it like you listening at home or in your car or wherever can see. But yeah, on the cheek, there's sort of a, you know, the
like the rising sun thing from
it's like a, you know, it's a red dot.
We can post a picture of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's super exceptional. So we have musical things. We've got like a little bit of like a Meatloaf stage production set going on here in the
garage. That's a good way to put it.
Next week, pyrotechnics.
Yes, exactly. I've been watching that Geico ad where they've got the dude singing the final countdown when the guy's got microwave, and it's like, hair bands are everywhere, I guess.
Yep. All right.
So something else has changed. I have to mention it because it's been like the topic of conversation almost every single week for the last
closed
year.
Closed captioning in here tonight.
There is closed captioning or closed ceiling, actually.
Yeah, holes in the ceiling.
If you have listened to this show at all over the past several months, Mark has had this. When we recorded in Mark's garage, he's got this has had this big gaping hole in the ceiling, and now it looks like it was never there.
It just looks like a ceiling.
I know.
And I think that's really what you want when you get your ceiling repaired. You don't want it to like stand out.
Dude, your wife is going to sleep like a baby while we do these things.
Well,
now.
Here's the other thing. It's like, it keeps the freshness of the podcast in.
Oh, so that's a smart.
You can like stew in
it's
the
like,
juices.
Like fresh,
of the
freshness sealed.
Yes.
Trademark.
Exactly. Ergonomically. Yeah. I don't know how that works. Anyway.
Music now. I'm Shane.
Ryan.
Kevin.
And Mark.
Somebody likes it.
And the latest thing is that apparently there is a Will Ferrell themed bar in New York that just opened called Stay Classy, which is the first thing that popped into my head was like,
wait, like he owns it or
no? I think it's just themed after
like trademarked.
Let's not get specific. I think that it is inspired by Ron Burgundy.
Okay, so it's not like the Bubba Gump Shrimp Company, like in Times Square.
No,
like,
no, this is some kitschy New York thing.
Okay,
and you know, presumably they have Scotch specials. I just thought it would have been funnier if they called it "Fuck You, San Diego."
That's pretty good too.
I wish I got that reference. I've seen that movie like once.
Yeah, I've seen it once.
Yeah, well, he says that.
Okay,
reading off a teleprompter when someone is trying to
fuck you, San Diego.
Yeah.
I don't know if you could put fuck in your
public-facing
business.
Everybody who listens to this podcast who's seen a movie more than once would know that his sign-off on that in that film was Stay Classy, San Diego, and then somebody jacked with the teleprompter because he was not savvy enough to not read whatever popped up on there. Anyway, how's that for good podcast?
Amazing.
That's good stuff.
Yeah.
You just returned from New York, so that's what...
I guess 3 weeks ago, and that city is still the same, still little funky? Well,
bustling.
Bustling.
It is a bustling place.
It is a bustling place. There,
I've heard it's a Big Apple.
Well, I didn't see any of those while I was there. It's like
large
was it,
apples.
What was it?
Any extremely large apples, like unwieldy apples.
I would like to buy a Big Apple in the Big Apple.
Unwieldy apple, I think, is much more interesting.
Most apples are totally wieldy.
Yes. An unwieldy one that like sets you off your center of balance when you pick it up.
Ungraspable. The ungraspable apple. Anyway, yeah. Fun to be there.
You know what? The people that do all of the work for the like the guy that designed the I Heart New York shirt and stuff, that department, they should hire us. We should pitch that.
Oh, sure.
This is good stuff, dude.
Because what they need in New York are ideas.
It's true.
About self-promotion.
Yeah. None of that going on there.
Yeah. Anyway, so yeah. But the Stay Classy thing popped up today, and I was like, I was like, you could do that in Austin. Like, you could absolutely open a Will Ferrell themed bar, but it seems like it would have a short shelf life.
The first
probably
the first bar I ever went to in New York, I can't remember the name of it, but it was so great, and it was
TGI Fridays.
I think it was the Bubblegum Shrimp Company, actually. It had the look of like a double wide trailer, and all they served, the only thing they served were PBR tall boys, and like all the carpet was ripped up, and there were like TVs that didn't work, and it was just like this. It was like taking a dive bar to like a completely different level.
Wasn't there a place called like Double Wide or something?
Well, there's one in Dallas.
No, there's one in Dallas called Double Wide.
Yeah.
I could probably think of what this one was called, but
like single bar that's or separate bar that they have that is kind of the same thing. Hey, by the way, so just while we've been talking about it on the Stay Classy thing, what you could do is when that bar runs its course and it's not kitschy enough anymore, you could just pick a different Will Ferrell movie.
Like, just change it to Stranger than Talladega Fiction. Nights or something.
Stranger than Fiction.
Yeah,
sure. That's the real wacky one.
Yeah.
So anyway, ideas. I'm just saying.
You guys want to talk about music?
I was going to say, speaking of wacky.
Yeah. Okay. So I guess we should do this now. So so this was my record to choose.
Yeah, I think I introduced the germ of this idea to you at some point.
I don't think. If maybe you did.
I mentioned that I was going to do it because I thought it would be entertaining because I know how much you love this band and Shane hates them.
Oh, yeah.
We talked about.
Let me preface this by saying. So today we're going to be talking about Steely Dan's record Asia, and
AJA, by the way.
Yeah,
is that what it's called? I couldn't figure out how to pronounce it.
I was like Asia.
Yeah, it's pronounced Asia.
Asia, like the continent.
Like the continent.
Yes. Jesus Christ.
Like the supergroup.
Yeah. Even another wonderful reason to love this band.
So anyway, I just I had a pretty solid idea, and I didn't pick it for this reason. I knew Shane would hate it. Like, I had zero % chance that Shane doesn't hate this whole situation. And of course, you texted me to that effect. And
you had to break it up into chunks.
I did.
Yeah. And they're only like 7 or 8 songs.
Eight songs.
Yeah.
There are 8 songs.
Yeah. But anyway,
40 minutes total.
Yeah. But anyway, and Ryan doesn't love jazz, and there's a certain amount of like jazz influence here either. So
there's a large amount of jazz.
Yeah.
Influence.
I fully expected that when we went down this road.
No, it was you doing your Bon Jovi.
There's a little bit of that, but it's also like.
So but you actually like it.
I do like it, and beyond that, like part of the genesis of the way that this week of this podcast happened was it last Christmas, Ryan, that you gave me this book?
I think it was.
Yeah, so Ryan gave me a book called 1001 Songs You Must Hear Before You Die and 10,001 You Must Download. And so right now I'm going to read you all of them. So if you'll just settle in.
Thank you, Andy Kaufman.
Yeah, exactly.
What was the title of the book? 1001
songs
that you'll hear that make you want to die?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, yeah.
Because these would fit into that book.
Oh, sure. 1001 songs you must hear before you die. So anyway, so I was just thumbing through here, and I actually was going to go a different direction, and I saw that, and I was like, you know, I have always known of this record. I clearly know a few tracks off this record, but I've never heard it as a
cohesive unit,
cohesive piece of art or whatever. Yeah. And so I decided to pick it up. Shane hates it as much as he did is only an ancillary benefit.
I must say that I've noticed that you keep this book exactly where I would keep it, which is right by the toilet.
Well, and you know, like, so the way that, and we can, and eventually, like, so when we get to the track that sparked the idea of, hey, maybe this is what we ought to try and talk about this week, I'll read you a little bit of what they share here, and I thought it was a really interesting take, and so I don't read it often, but I do read it some.
No, it's like designed to be broken up into, you know, little easily digestible chunks for a couple minutes at a time.
Like 1001 digestions.
Yeah, and before we go off on any further tangents, I have to share one other thing, which is how, like, so the reason that I love this band, or that I like found fondness for this band was years ago, in between my senior year of high school and my freshman year of college, I worked for a time at an AM radio station in Houston, which is now like a, I don't know, it's like a talk station or whatever. But at the time, I was doing overnights on this little AM radio station that was in this teeny tiny house in Tomball, Texas. And they were a talk station, but they would run these like tax advice programming. And that was mostly what they would play from like 0 to 6 or from midnight to 6. And so you can only imagine, like, I'm 19 and it's like 3 o'clock in the morning and they're talking about like tax shelters. And I was seriously, I was like, this is how people kill themselves. Like, that's how it starts.
That's about as boring as life gets.
It's like, if somebody said, show me an example of boring, I'd be like, I can see you and raise any example.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
So anyway, what would happen is like a lot of that programming was automated, but I would just have to plug in the commercials when they would pop up. Well, what you find is that like you've got 15, 20, 30, 40 minute chunks sometimes of like when the radio station is doing its thing and doesn't need your help. And it had been an AOR station, an album oriented rock station. And so they had all of these old records, and I would just pull records down and I would go sit in the sound booth and put on an album on this really great sound system and hear, like, you know, and just like sort of soak stuff up until it was time to go plug another cart in to play an ad. Very short end to a long story is that they had among their collection Steely Dan's Gaucho. So I finally, like, I actually came to this band backwards, because that was sort of the last album they put out before they went on extended hiatus. And I never knew really any of the earlier work until I got to know them through that last thing. But in the middle of the night, when all you have to choose from is like, even good tax advice is shitty to listen to on the radio, and something that can kind of take
you
to another place.
Have been,
I really enjoyed it
at our childhood home at the time. Cause
I was.
You're the one who kind of, I hesitate to use the term, turned me on to Steely Dan, but like, I tolerate them because, like, you were into them at the time, and I was probably 15 or 16, and they weren't like what was on pop radio, like New Kids on the Block or Milli Vanilli or whatever that. And so I thought they were just different enough to be kind of interesting.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to fall solidly right in between you and Shane.
I'm sure that that's true. Yeah. I just remember that, like, so I remember that. I remember that Chuck Klosterman always said that interviewing Donald Fagen was like sitting down with a college professor who was trying to get himself fired. And I was like,
that's more amusing than anything on this.
I was like, yeah. Anyway, Shane, I'm monopolizing. You go ahead.
What did you think, Shane?
Well, so let me just start off by saying I don't have any such rosy, gauzy memories.
Feels like a challenge.
It feels.
Who listens to this?
My notes are, it feels like a challenge. That's the, and then there, it was going to have, like, it's the second one is, who listens to this? And it were going to be a litany of question marks. I mean, I like what you said. It makes you want to, well, let me start off by saying this. So let me be as charitable as I'm going to be. The first, I was previously familiar with Peg and Deacon Blues, which I consider to be two of the worst songs that I've ever had crammed in my fucking ears. And so, and I knew what to expect, but then I put this on, and
There are actually a couple of the better songs on there.
No, God, no. The first song, Brown Cow, was it starts out all. I mean, I hated it, but I was like, oh, okay. Well, this isn't.
It's trying to be nice, but I gotta get it. I hated it.
Yeah. I mean, I hated it. I hate the way, and I love how they talk in their Wikipedia history and stuff about how like people suggest that you put this album on to hear what it really. Oh, I love that they didn't win an Oscar or they didn't win a Grammy for like content of the music. They won it for their engineering. These guys are just engineering fools. So I don't know what that says about the music that they actually create, but God knows that.
You think they wear the little hats, like the?
It's a different kind of engineer.
Oh, sorry,
dumbass.
Yeah, okay.
So, no, not that kind. And so they, this song Brown Cow. I mean, it sounds slick and smooth. And you're right when it says it makes you want to hear wear a loser suit. I swear to God, there was like a gif of people dancing in Studio 54 in my head when I, even though this wasn't the kind of music that was playing there. This is some 70s ass shit.
No, like when the singles bars were an actual thing.
Yeah,
exposed chest hair and gold chains.
Yes, exposed. I wanted like red shag carpet curtains and like, but also like green avocado. Shag carpet, you know, colors that don't.
We had that when we were kids.
There is a certain like L.A. at sunset in the 70s thing that happens with this.
There's a certain, there's a certain 70s thing.
To me, you have yacht rock, which I think is kind of taken off.
Hey, McDonald plays
this
on this
record. The guys that stayed on the dock. This is dock rock.
Dock rock, yeah.
Dock rock, yeah. Nice. Mark for the win.
Although I don't know. I mean, Michael McDonald played keys on this record.
He did.
So it's like
and backing vocals.
I'm like, man, that sure sounds like Michael McDonald. Well, that's because it is Michael.
Oh, yeah. God, it's so interminable. I can't believe you said it was only 40 minutes. I swear to God, I literally had to break this up into three song chunks or however that worked out.
Three, two.
No. I did four songs. And then I guess I did it only. And then two.
Let's
songs.
Let's listen
two
to
songs.
A chunk, Kevin.
Oh, good.
Rip it off like a Band-Aid. Let's start with Peg.
Let me just let you know one thing about this. If I listen back to this show, I will be fast-forwarding over this clip. I seen your picture. Your name in lights above it. This is your big debut. It's like a dream come true. Yeah, that's good stuff.
Oh, yeah. We're going to play that at your funeral.
Yeah. You know what? If you play it again, you might have occasion to play it at my funeral quicker than you thought. I want to say one thing real quick before I forget about it.
Thank you.
You the other day via text.
They're hugging tightly right now.
Yeah. I've read stuff about them, and you guys just mentioned it a second ago, and that's that they're – that there are jazz influences, and you said jazzy, and I was like, right, jazzy doesn't mean jazz, just like smooth jazz bears no relation to jazz. This is like smooth.
That's a fair point.
Smooth.
There's a bit of a jazz fusion.
There's a jazzy thing. There's a maybe jazz fusion. I'll give you that. This is like classic rock and fucking smooth jazz.
So I want to share. So it was actually this song that popped up in that book that you gave me, Ryan.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
Some of this we've talked about a little bit, but it said like, by 1977, Steely Dan had honed an already smooth sound into an impossibly polished jazz pop fusion, not a glitch in its sophisticated armory. I know Shane's going to disagree with that. There wasn't a single slouch, Walter Becker said, of the players on the 76 Southern Royal Scam, which was the record that predated this one. Anyway, essentially, the point that they get to is that these guys are super picky. And they eventually determined that they, A, didn't want to tour anymore, and B, that they didn't have to keep the same band around with all of these really amazing session players that lived in LA at the time. And so they essentially became two guys and a bunch of who wrote the songs and a bunch of session
rotating
players.
Rotating cast of characters.
It's kind of like the 70s version of Daft Punk is right now.
Yeah, I would think. I mean, that's. I don't think that that's entirely incongruent. So
a very, very slick music also.
Yeah. So
and they would do like a like each song they would record like 40 times or something to.
That song in particular, the guitar solo was recorded 40 times, and the guy who finally did a version of it that they were like, okay, this is the one that we want to keep, is he was a producer guitarist, and they used to go through, like, apparently they went through, like, producers as well. So it was like, you know, it was just like one of these, like, kind of never being sort of satisfied. And,
well, you'll,
and
sorry, like, that is some 70s hubris right there.
You will at least admit
the record's a bit overproduced.
I think that
there
it is.
There's like zero spontaneity on this record at all.
I'll admit to that. And I think certainly I can see how some people would say that it's overproduced. I think The people that really connect with it maybe feel like it arrived at the place that it should arrive.
That's the people that like that sound. I mean, sure. I'll down the band all day long, but I'm not going to down their fans. Like, everybody comes from like a different place and stuff that they like. To me, it's less overproduced than it is just shined to a very
chrome like finish.
Right. Yeah. It's very
too clean.
One of the things that I do kind of find appealing is that lyrically, like, a lot of sort of lyrical content tends to be pretty dark.
Yeah, but his lyrics are good.
Yeah, well, the lyrics are dark.
Ooh, Shane had something nice to say.
I do. His lyrics can be, not always,
can
but
we
they
put in the needle on the record scratch right there?
There can be. He does have some funny lyrics. I love just the fact that the band is named after a dildo. I mean,
that is true from William Burroughs' book.
Naked Lunch.
Naked Lunch.
Which is also the name of a really, really, really amazing Steely Dan cover band in DFW. Like
Naked Lunch or
the Naked Lunch. That's what and they're like 20 people in that band. Like, that's how many people they have to put on stage, but they sound exactly like Steely Dan. They're a lot of fun if you like Steely Dan.
So. Not, amazing. Not for Shane.
Like when you said amazing Steely Dan cover band, I just had this idea of like a completely deconstructing the music and the, you know, whatever you're doing with No.
I'm gonna give a little plug to girl that I know fairly reasonably well, but
Like your version of "To All the Girls I've Loved Before"?
No,
like,
but there's a girl here in town who posted something on Facebook recently, and I know her fairly well. But she's in a Devo cover band called We Are Not Men.
It's
all women. Yeah, and I think that's a pretty good idea. They wear the little hats.
Yeah,
and they're indeed not men.
Yeah, that's totally great. So the last piece that I'm going to read of this Peg review says, and this is why that I wanted to share it, because Shane, you talked a little bit about the disco thing, and it says, of course, Peg sounds almost disco, but its funky strut was not left to fester. In 1989, De La Soul exhumed its perfectly preserved form, snatching bass line, brass, and vocal sample to bring the bliss to the Daisy Age hit I Know. A little bit of like what goes around.
And that's a good song, and that goes back to something I've said before, and we talked about this last week. I think it was last week when you weren't here. And that is that, like that. I think that's a good song, but they reappropriated it in an interesting way. Just like, you know, like you'll hear a Bob Dylan song or a Grateful Dead song done by somebody else. You're like, that's a great song, and then you find out it's a Grateful Dead song. You're like, oh wow!
Yeah, like All Along in the Watchtower, I think is amazing. Done by Jimi Hendrix,
right? Exactly.
And done by Bob Dylan. Like, it's pretty good.
Yeah. Sounds like a Dylan song.
Thank you, Bob Dylan. What else you got?
Kevin, you want to cue up another song?
Yeah, so I don't know. Maybe we ought to let's do Deacon Blues, because I think that there's I know that Shane hates that song. But I think lyrically,
so I was right.
There's
that
something interesting that
theory.
They try to do here, and so we'll talk about it on the other side.
Throw a kiss and say goodbye.
So there is a line in here where he says, so sue me if I go on too long. And I'd just like to say that I have started a class action lawsuit.
Well, let me be the first to sign on to, or the second, I should say.
It's like, yeah, that's, isn't that how Kickstarter got started? Like, somebody went like, I need some money because I have to do something foolish. that's not my favorite song on the record by any stretch, but one of the things that I, one of the reasons I wanted to share it is that I do think that there is a sentiment that is expressed in that song that I think kind of covers the sort of like worldview of these two guys, which is that essentially like what they do is they contrast the world through the eyes of college football teams. One of the successful one being Alabama, the Crimson Tide, and the unsuccessful one being Wake Forest, the Demon Deacons.
Basketball team every now and then.
Wait, this is a real thing?
It's a real thing.
Like, I thought you were just making up this obtuse, like this makes weird me analogy. Hate this band even more.
Well, anyway, the point being was that the way that the lyrics come together for this song, it's like they identify with the outcast, like they identify with the outsider. And so that outsider is in rural North Carolina, they don't ever bring up. But like, you know, at the very least, like that's their take. Like they want to, you know, there was something that I read about Donald Fagen during the research for this tonight, where he was talking about, I guess, during their time at Bard College, which that's funny. Like, I'm sorry. Bard College, yeah.
Yeah.
In New York. And
is that where you go to learn to be Shakespeare?
Perhaps, yes. Yeah. Pontificate.
Yeah.
And so, anyway, two things around what I read about that time were pretty funny, or at least noteworthy. One was that apparently Chevy Chase was a drummer in a band that they do.
Like, that was true, yeah. He was the original drummer or one of the early drummers in a band that precursored Steely Dan.
To Steely Dan?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, anyway. And then the other thing was that Donald Fagen said that time in his life was really the only time that he could ever remember having friends. And so Shane will probably say,
he sounds like a fucking weird dude.
No, I do think he's a weird dude.
He's got super big-time stage fright, which is a big reason why they didn't tour a lot.
Right.
All you have to do is listen to this music to know, like, somehow there's some weirdness going on in the background.
He's just embarrassed to play it in front of people.
Well, no, not yet. just that there's somehow, it's just such a weird amalgamation of things at the time that were... It seems like a record that was made to go home and, like, smoke a joint and put on some headphones and listen to your hi-fi by yourself kind of thing. Like,
I thought you were going to say throw a rope over the rafters.
Well, no, if it were me, I wouldn't have done any of those things that I just said.
So sit in your beanbag chair, like, just kind of...
Yeah, I don't know. I can see this music. It is weird. I mean, now we don't see it as, but it's a pretty weird combination of stuff. I mean, sometimes I feel like when you pull that slot lever and you come up with the fruit, then the bar, then the whatever. Sometimes like the weird combinations can turn up and be great. This is one of those where
it turned up wrong.
It turned up wrong.
Well, I think the one thing that I read that was I thought was particularly interesting was that one review said that Steely Dan has no, like, at the time that this band sort
soul?
Of came into prominence, had no musical antecedent. And so, it's not like you can hear the Beatles in this band. It's
they are critical darlings, and I think that's probably why.
Well, it's
sure. That they were doing something completely different than anything anyone else had ever done.
If you're looking for one.
Which is not to say that they should.
Well, whatever. If you're looking for an antecedent to what it is that they ended up becoming, it's like, really, it's sort of like, it's almost like Duke Ellington era jazz when there was more song structure and it was sort of less free flowing and
squonky.
more of a like production situation. Yeah. And so they combine that with certain elements of like 70s.
Yeah, there's
rock
like
and a little
pop,
bit of math.
There's
rock
like funk, funk. There's like a funky sound and bass. It's not funk. Don't get me wrong. It's just prominent, and there's it's funky. Again, the difference between funk and funky. I guess I could say that you could like I was saying about jazzy and jazz or whatever.
Sure, jazz hands.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, what I was going to say is it stands out. You know, it
doesn't sound like anything.
It doesn't
else.
Sound like
that is true.
You yeah. definitely know a Steely Dan song when you hear one.
Yeah,
like, you're not like, who's this?
No,
who's
this? I don't. If I if
Wait, it's a, some marital aid, I can't. Yeah.
If a Steely Dan song comes on the radio, like it saves me so much time where I don't I, before I know that I have to change the channel.
Punch it right out.
I just have to do it immediately. Okay,
so, send your letters to.
You want to do a few minutes with Ryan? You have it this week.
I do, and I will share. On the other side.
All right, sounds good. Let's do a few minutes with.
Now you're pointing at me. Yeah, so I've got a few minutes with, and it's going to be a few minutes with Bow Wow Wow. I want
Yippee-yo, yippee-yay. Oh,
so
right.
Awesome. Similar.
Yeah, not yippee-yo, yippee-yay, and also really similar to Steely Dan.
Is it I Want Some of the Candy?
I believe it's actually called I Want Candy.
I would like a piece of your candy.
Yeah. May I have some
candy, please, sir?
These are all like translations.
Totally.
May I have some candy?
Two pence worth of sweets, please.
It's the austere British version of that song.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think that's great. I mean, we're coming up on Halloween. Yeah.
There's a lot of backstory.
Oh, that is a Halloween-themed song. You're right.
That's true. I hadn't even thought about that. Sure enough.
Yeah.
Never mind. I know you didn't.
Yeah.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I thought you said shirt off, and I was like,
sure
enough.
Now I got
enough.
It. Yes, I understand now.
Anyway, so that's what we're doing?
We're doing I Want Candy.
What's that song?
Which is actually a cover, but we'll get into that.
All right, well, let's go watch the video.
Love that song so much.
It's a good song.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of backstory there. I don't know how much you guys know about Bow Wow Wow.
I know nothing about Bow Wow Wow.
They basically are Malcolm McLaren's creation. Like New Kids on the Block or, you know, any boy band you can think of, like he made them up. And they're also the Ants plus Annabella, whatever her last name is.
The Ants from Adam Ant.
He stole their entire band and made a new band and then hired or did auditions for like 6 months till he found her. She was 14 at the time, 16 when this video was made.
She doesn't look 16.
She does not look 16. And her mother was not very happy with her involvement.
I would not have been either. Can I be real quick before we get into this? There's one thing that I found really, I mean, just from my point of view, like interesting about this. Take away just the way that the video looked and what they were wearing and the way they looked. It could have come out this year.
Everything
that they were like the guitar player with the
you mean
aviator,
the fashion or the concept?
The fashion, the aviator sunglasses with the weird
cyclical
hair with
nature
the
of
yeah, and
that
what
stuff.
She was wearing with those ankle boots and she's same thing like with her hair up and these kind of like quasi dreads and stuff. I mean, it literally could have come out this year.
They might not have done like the Stonehenge candy canes.
That was the
solarization and
that's what I was saying. I was saying other than the way that it looks with the video and that stuff and the oversized sexualization of a 16-year-old girl. Don't forget about that. When she goes and gets in the ocean water.
When she was 15, she appeared naked on a album cover. I mean, not showing the naughty bits, but she was definitely naked in a recreation of Déjeuner sur l'herbe or Luncheon on the Grass. Yeah, thank you. But there's a famous Manet painting where, like, there's a naked woman on there, and they did a recreation of it, and mom was not very happy about, not our mom, but her mom, not very happy about that. And so,
who's it a cover of?
Who
did the original version of that song?
Oh, Strange Love.
Oh,
like,
okay.
It's in the 50s. I've heard it before. It just sounds like a more 50s version of that song.
And that version, the original was probably
gender reversal, isn't it?
I think it was sung by a man.
The original one's probably about candy, just like a guy who likes candy.
Just really likes candy. back in the 50s, yeah.
Yeah, anybody got some taffy? Like, that's what that song was originally called.
Yeah, it's a good song. That's what it, I get that song confused with. There were other songs that came out at that time, like I Know
Katrina
What Boys
the
Like, or Katrina. And, yeah, right. I'm Walking on Sunshine.
Sure.
There's like poppy, boppy.
Yeah, I remember
I'm not saying
they're all distinct to me.
Yeah, I mean, no. I just get them all confused. Like, they're all someone's part of like one. I don't think they all sound the same. It's just like one sound. Like, they're all good.
They were playing the same crowds.
And I do think that, like, one thing that all, like, those songs all sound like is, like, a band who was, like, any act that was constructed to put their one song together. Like, nobody ever asked, like, but what about the rest of Katrina and the Waves catalog? You know, it's like, what's the old joke, Ryan? Like, I have all of your album.
Think that was your joke.
Yeah, it was.
Or even like Naked Eyes, who also had a one-hit wonder that was a cover song.
Love that song.
Always something there to remind me.
Right.
Oh, yeah, that's a pretty good song.
That's a cover? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Who knew?
It is.
Anyway, thanks for walking us down memory lane.
It's a little bit of counter-programming. Because it doesn't sound like Steely Dan.
It is some kind of programming.
It does not sound like Steely Dan.
It does not.
Just remembered that we actually had to go back and listen to another Steely Dan song.
Oh, good Lord. But produced very carefully, albeit in a totally different way.
And I love the production on this song.
Well, maybe he's...
And I feel the same way about most Adam and the Ants stuff I've heard, is like it's got incredible percussion to the point where, like, apparently Malcolm McLaren like got some like field recordings of like some African tribes like playing drums, and then just exposed a bunch of people to him in England, and people thought that was like sort of, I don't know, like cultural
theft.
Malcolm
McLaren, the dude that put the Sex Pistols together,
the very same, like kind of the precursor to what's that asshole that was on American Idol.
Simon
Garfunkel. Yeah, Simon Cowell.
I was going to say Simon LeBlanc.
Simon Garfunkel.
Simon Garfunkel. Simon, like the dude from Duran Duran, Simon LeBlanc.
That's going to be my stage name when I embark on my
Simon solo. Garfunkel?
Simon Garfunkel.
Simon LeBlanc Garfunkel.
Yeah. Let's go talk about Doc Rock.
Let's get back into Asia, and we'll do that on the other side. Okay, so I have been wanting to share a little bit of the Rolling Stone take on this record, and sometimes I think these
but they like it,
the magazine or the band.
They do like it. Yes.
No, the phenomenon of a stone rolling downhill, gathering no moss,
right, and yet doing music reviews.
Multiple stones.
Yes.
Yeah. No, this is not Keith and Mick. And whatever, Gravity, you know, talking about this record. This is a guy named Michael Duffy who wrote this in December of 1977. He said, I'll just hit a highlight. He said, Asia will continue to fuel the argument by rock purists that Steely Dan's music is soulless and by its calculated nature antithetical to what rock should be. But this is in many ways relevant to a final evaluation of the band, the only group around with no conceptual antecedent from the 60s, which we talked a little bit about before the break. Their six albums contain, according to this guy, some of the few important stylistic innovations in pop music of the past decade by returning to swing and early bebop for inspiration before jazz diverged totally from established conventions of pop song structure. Fagan and Becker have overcome the amorphous quality that has plagued most other jazz rock fusion attempts. Whether you agree with like sort of where he nets out there, I think some of the premises that he sets up are interesting.
I definitely see where he's
touching on. He's touching on that, on what we discussed, the production, as Shane kind of put it, the over cleanliness of the end result,
and right,
the amount of time that they spend just re-recording things until they're perfect, I think.
Well, in jazz as a construct with song structure rather than just like noodling and squonking.
I appreciate that. I appreciate those words. But
more than the actual music.
But considerably more than the actual music. Yeah, man, if I read that review without having, I would have been like,
go check them out.
And motherfucker, I need to go buy this shit right now. And then I would be very disappointed and figure
banging
out
banging your head against the nearest cinder block.
How I could get my money back as quickly as possible.
Well, here's the other point that he makes in this article, I think is pretty interesting. And he says that Asia exhibits a carefully manipulated isolation from its audience with no pretense of embracing it. And I think that's probably true. Like,
this, definitely isolated this, from Shane.
Well, obviously. But I mean, like, even beyond like one guy not liking it or lots of people not liking it, the way that this band puts these songs out there, like they're not intended to be warm. They're intended to be what they are, which is like probably not unlike Donald Fagan, like a little unique and
little out
perhaps
there,
well, little distant.
Like, you make a good point there, and that's that. And I guess I just don't like them. But I mean, once I get into thinking about who they are, is and when I'm like, who listens to this? I shouldn't say who listens to this. I can get that. It's who loves this. I mean, you can't.
Kevin Newsom.
And I can't. Well, and I will.
You listen
want,
to it all the time.
No,
like,
no. But I go through. I'll go through Jags where I listen to a lot of Steely Dan.
You said good, bad, or indifferent. I definitely think it's bad. But I mean, there are things that I do appreciate, and I think I touched on this before, and I'll just reiterate for a second that you're right. I mean, they didn't have. There wasn't a lot. There was nothing that sounded like Steely Dan, and pretty much nothing that sounds like Steely Dan, like, you know, since then. I want to say one more thing before we get out of this, because I will forget. My other competing image, other than the gif of the woman in the pink chiffon dress dancing at Studio 54, is like of somebody's dad, like, with his shirt a couple buttons too low, like, wearing khaki shorts and boat shoes, like just on his back porch, just dancing to himself, listening to this, you know, after having had a couple of beers. And so the reason why is
that actually sounds like happy times to me.
It sounds like great times, right?
Yeah,
but
yeah.
But long ago when we were talking a few episodes ago when Phil was here and you guys were talking about the Suki Rae and Dad Rock. This is what Dad Rock is to me, like fucking Steely Dan.
Well, and you could certainly make the argument that this is like certainly more chronologically important. Like
No.
It's older, and it also appeals to, like, I will say this, and we haven't gotten into this part, and it's probably a little late in the podcast, so we won't go down the rabbit hole on it, but I will say that, like, it's certainly not a scientific observation, but it's like I have pockets of, I certainly know people who I adore who are not Steely Dan fans, and I totally get it. Like, I have no problem with that whatsoever. But I also have friends and people that I meet who are big Steely Dan nuts, and they have certain characteristics, and they're not.
Like, I was going to ask you, like, do they have like a trait in common?
They tend to be they
like deadheads or something.
No, not at all. Like, they're not necessarily even similar to each other, other than the fact that they're all bright people and like kind of independent thinkers. Like, I find that typically like it, as a like as a class photo.
Well, and
it
I will
would
say,
be really,
yeah, I'll say this
really
about Steely Dan: like they don't, they, I can't imagine them. You can't call them a lowest common denominator. You might not like them.
They're not the,
but
whatever,
they're not
the
they're not like
or,
base level like, shitty, you know. Pop. Yeah.
You're not going to find some guy that this is his favorite band and his next favorite band is Limp Bizkit. Probably
you're
not.
Yeah. You're not going to see that. You're not going to. Okay, and to make it more like era specific, there's nobody that's really into Steely Dan who also thinks Beth is the best Kiss song ever.
Oh, yeah. So anyway, we did one thing we didn't mention before we maybe do one more track is that in 2011, Asia was deemed by the Library of Congress to be culturally, historically, or aesthetically important and added to the U.S. National Recording Registry. Ha ha ha.
Bing.
There you go. Booyah. So anyway, and it's on a Rolling Stone list, but I almost feel like those are useful or not useless because they revise them all the time and they put out different ones. But anyway, we've got maybe one more track before we go to the...
yeah, it's your pick, brother.
Okay. Shane... Do you hate Josie, I guess?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, there's not a song he doesn't hate.
Okay, well, let's do Josie then.
All right. Okay.
Interesting piece. There was a site called the Classic Rock Review, which I have not found. But anyway, apparently they got some traction on this because if you run searches for this record, it pops up in the. Also, Fog Machine update. If you guys are wondering, listening.
Oh, totally rock and roll up in here right now.
Super, yeah. Super rock and roll between the Godspell painting and the fog. But anyway, it says the album concludes with Josie, the most rock oriented song on the record. Albeit heavily funk-oriented, in fact, the album's liner notes refer to the song as Punkadelia. I don't even know if that what that word means. A fusion of funk with more sardonic lyric. This actually sounds like it's not very well written. But anyway, the point being is recording features several more studio innovations ranging from the incorporation of synthesizers to the inclusion of a garbage can lid by drummer Jim Keltner. So anyway, whatever. It, like, ultimately... Roving cast of characters, lots of session musicians. And I did think one thing that I haven't mentioned was that Walter Becker actually said, in relation to this record and how many people they had play on it, he said that actually he would have been totally fine with not playing on his own album. They enjoyed being, they had the vision, they enjoyed being the puppeteers. And the, like they could play, that. He's a proficient guitarist, like they could play them, but he was like, if we bring people in and we craft it the way that we
so
want
to craft
it,
so they were more
cares?
Like the maestro types.
Yeah. I mean, and there have been bands like that or acts like that, like the and like you know, there are a few acts where...
Yeah, the had like one guy in it, though, and like a rotating cast of characters.
Well,
right.
But I mean, yeah. The point being is it's one of those things that has been done from time to time in different genres and to varying amounts of success. And so anyway, I just think that it was... For me, like taking on this record was a window into their process a little bit and kind of where they were, and it was just something I hadn't explored. So anyway,
I kind of see where they bring up funk, but it has to be the least funky thing I've ever called funk.
No, it's not, you know, we're not talking about funkadelic.
I think that they're trying, like that writer or those writers are trying to differentiate between the idea of like rock sound bass or like... other sound bass.
Well, I guess this is like finger picked or slapped a little.
A little slap, but yeah, I mean, it doesn't, but it, I don't know. It does not sound like rock and roll bass.
This is not, no, that's, well, that's not part of it.
And you didn't
either.
Have a lot, you didn't have a lot of permutations of music in the 70s. You didn't have a lot of, like, as many choices of...
As many, many genres?
As we do now.
That's true.
Well, and the taste of the public has changed. I mean, one of the things that... I mentioned Klosterman earlier. One of the things that he also wrote about, which doesn't have anything directly to do with this, but I think it's kind of analogous, is, like, if it's better that we have all of this information at our fingertips. Like, one of the things that we were talking about during the break in between... The last segment before we got back to this record was like, what happened to all these people as they went on? Well, we can look all that out and find it at a moment's notice.
Within seconds.
Yeah, within seconds. Mm. And then, you know, in this case, like, you're really listening to albums as a cohesive piece of work, and there's a little bit of that you lose when you have a single mindset or a single track mindset. So, anyway, it's an ode to a different era, and... Yeah, interesting. Well, Kevin, interesting to poke around.
I'm gonna say, not thank you, but just thank.
Oh,
because
sure.
I'm.
You said you'd fall in the middle.
I'm completely in the middle.
Okay,
I'm gonna say two thumbs down, way down.
All right. Well, that'll leave me to roll down the windows as I drive down Rodeo in my giant collared fancy suit. So
giant collared fancy suit.
Yeah, just gonna be what I call my cover band.
Okay,
right,
so
Shane, what you got for
us? Yeah, so for Current Affair, I've been thinking about this. I have two pretty good ones. I'm gonna go with the one without the video. This is gonna be An Island by Clara Nova.
Hello, everyone. I'm Maureen O'Boyle. Welcome to A Current Affair for this Friday, February 5th.
Telling me where to go from here, humming in my ear. There's something in the breeze, feeling it in the wind patterns, is pushing me out there. And I don't know what you've been told. The future is ours, I'm sure of it. But
the main reason I wanted to listen to that was just to have a little chaos. Like after music that's so tightly
precise.
I mean, this is like
it's precise in a different way.
It is, but there's the, and that's the thing that there's all of this weird like.
Well, can I just say this? If there's not already this adjective in the English lexicon, I'm going to coin it: Bjorky.
Mm-hmm. I told you there's Bjork stuff going on there.
Bjorky, but, and kind of what's that band? Churches. A little bit of that. A little bit.
More Bjork, I feel,
but
like,
yeah, Bjorky.
She doesn't sound like that with her vocals as much as she does like the curveballs being thrown in the
That's
production.
Exactly a good way to put it. Like, you know, like that beer, like they kind of spin off
How's
in
that?
Like
what
a weird dissonant
beer,
way.
Beer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of orchestral stuff that turns into like dissonance, cacophony just for a second. And it sounds like sheet metal being beaten, but like in this like softened way, so it's not like
it
in
actually
your face.
Reminded me of an article I read earlier this week, and this happens every time people vote on Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, which is just, you know, rifled with, you know,
it's
controversy all the time. It is, but this guy wrote this impassioned screed about like, hey, any of the songs you've listened to in the last 30 years, like, are influenced by this one band, Kraftwerk, like anything that's
shut up.
No.
Well, to some degree he's right, but
I would love to hear that.
Anything that's been produced on not physical instruments in the last, well, actually, like they started in 1972, the year I was born.
Okay, yeah, but, well, yeah, if that's the metric that you're working by, yeah, okay.
But sure,
yeah,
but
then we have a discussion.
But to some degree, he's fully correct about that. But we've gone through so many generations now of music that's almost like saying, you know, like, well, you know, any words that you're saying these days came from Middle English, you know, like at some point.
Kind of true.
Like, well, but, it's all true, but it's irrelevant.
But
I mean, that's an irrelevant conversation.
Like, essentially,
sorry that you're the world's biggest Kraftwerk fan,
yeah,
dude.
I can't name. Meanwhile, I'm a big music fan. I can't name a Kraftwerk song.
Oh. Well, right. I told you about like the gal that I used to work with, who was like somehow or another we got to talk. She was here during. She was not a music fan and was here for a work thing during South by Southwest, and somehow or another we got to talking about Moby, and she was like, well, what are his songs that I would know? And I was like, wow, you know what? Like, I don't really know.
Like, he did that thing with Gwen Stefani.
Yeah.
East Side, something like that.
Yeah, what? Right, exactly. And that's the same thing. It's like we all like sort of tilt our head and just ponder what the answer
it's
might be.
It's like a dog looking at you when you're taking your clothes off.
Yes, exactly.
Or being shown a card trick.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, okay. Yeah. Well, coming off of that. Yeah, there's like noise and there's weird. And it's a good headphone
song. It's a pretty
song.
Good song.
It's a better, like I said before, it at first I was just drawn into it because of the weird production, but if you give it a couple of listens, like it'll start making more sense.
You are drawn to weird production.
Yeah.
What was that band that you played me that sounds like a 1950s film that has been worked
in the song? Oh, Ariel Pink's Haunted Graffiti.
Oh
boy, that's good stuff, man. You guys,
I hate that band.
You guys like, both need to be thanking me because I keep wanting to pick that to pick an album.
I actually think it's kind of amusing. But like because it's,
I think it's a good listen.
It sounds warped.
I enjoy that.
I have a hard time getting into that act. As much as I enjoyed like kind of the quirky preciseness of this, of what we have listened to is sort of the main thing tonight. I also equally enjoy like music that just like sort of drags you along like the tide. Like as long as it's interesting and there's something going on there of substance, like. Like I can absolutely
that nobody else is doing.
Yeah.
Well, sure. But that's the cool thing about that's the thing that seals it for me is that you have like an interesting verse, you have this interesting production, and then it like snaps literally on a snare hit kind of thing into that chorus. That's just it's super poppy and like super like it's very. If you go back and listen, like she's got a lot of complicated things going on melodically in the verse, and then all of a sudden it snaps into like a really typical pop song melody in the chorus. Interesting song.
Well, thanks for sharing.
Sure.
You're welcome. And so
who's got next week?
I do. Yeah. So next week we're going to listen to... Okay. So we were going to be listening to something from the 80s, but I don't want it to seem like I'm ramping up. I think I said that earlier in the show. So we're going to listen to Sylvanesso next week.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's a good band.
Yeah. I
have no idea what that is.
Good. I'm a bigger fan of dance music than both of you guys, and I've been finding a way to. I'm not going to make any of us just sit down and listen to an EDM record for 35, 40 minutes. This band has.
How would you know when you're ever done?
Well, I like
just
a lot.
Put
of
it on
stuff.
A loop and it's like hell.
But I'm not going to do that to you. But this band has a lot of dance elements to it. It actually has a lot of interesting disparate elements like that last song that we just listened to.
Ooh, Shane, you know what? LCD Sound System is getting back together.
Oh, yeah, can't wait for that.
I almost mentioned that as well. Yeah.
I know you're excited.
Yeehaw. I'm throwing my hat up in the air.
I don't understand how you
just
can
play
have
the hits.
One side of your head that you are bringing up this dancey thing,
because
which I haven't heard.
I also like drum and bass, but I really...
You're just very specific about your.
I just like what I like.
Certain kinds of drums, some kind of bass.
All right, whatever. Shut
some
up.
Drums, some
we'll
bass.
See. I'm just gonna nip this in the bud. I'm Shane.
I'm Ryan.
I'm Kevin.
And Mark.
That was Somebody Likes It.